This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Tuesday, 1st of June, 2021. New month going here, and we're back from holiday in the case of the UK today and the US, both out on holiday yesterday. And that leaves us with where we are in the main US indices. We've sort of climbed back towards those highs, only a few points below in the case of the S&P 500. You can see it on slide two. And I was just kind of pondering, Peter, you know, we don't have anything to talk about because there was no session yesterday, but where does this market find additional juice? And I'm not sure I understand where it does, at least in the near term. We're all concerned about the Fed moving towards a tapering message here, which has kind of already partially been rolled out. We have commodity prices very high, concerns about input costs, inflation, et cetera. Inflation, not a good environment for equities. You're the Mr. Optimist, Mr. Sunshine, of course, but answer to that question. Where is this market going to find additional juice sort of in the near, several weeks to a couple months with this Fed situation, et cetera?
Yeah, well, I actually say on slide three that the energy is definitely sizzling in equities. And I mean that it's very difficult to see a near-term catalyst. Earnings growth and the rebound has been extraordinary. There's uncertainty how much more tailwind we can get from that. We have the margins of companies potentially being pressured in the second half. I've said that before. I think it's a downside risk. The companies have been too confident that commodity prices and logistics costs would not go up. We'll talk a little bit more about that when Ole talks commodities, but also I'm introducing our logistics basket. So I'll come back to those points. I think it's very difficult to see the catalyst. I think the only path to really aggressive equities from here, as everyone knows, we are leaning much more in the a higher inflationary environment than they will just go back to the low inflation we knew, but that would be the wet dream of Cathie Wood and ARK Invest, right? So the Silicon Valley crowd and the growth investors, they are betting heavily. And we'll talk about it shortly again, John, on the bond stock correlations. But they're betting heavily that inflation will come crushing down, and we'll have low yields again. If that's the case, then equities will sport or sprint higher. Sorry. And but if we get inflation or we get any other hiccup, we could easily see a correction in equities. I don't think it is as rosy as the current market is suggesting. And just very quickly, because we talked about yesterday, John, about how to hedge this potential higher volatility, and we had one of our listeners asking us a question on our email. Thank you very much for that. And he said, how can I do it more cheaply than just buying options or whatever? And I would point to Virtu Financial and Flow Traders, which are market makers listed in Amsterdam and in New York. And as we've talked about on podcasts before, they actually have much less negative carry. They don't have any negative carry, actually, and you're still getting the upside on an equity decline. Mm-hmm. And then finally, sorry for taking this very long spiel, I just want to say on slide three that here in Europe, there's not a lot of news going on, but I think the biggest news is that Volkswagen is considering to do an IPO of its battery business because it's simply too risky and it costs too much. So they want to share that risk. Very interesting developments there, I think.
And I just noticed on your slide four, you pulled out something I was going to mention even before I saw that you popped the slide in there, a John Author's column, and I'll be sure to tweet that out. But this is something that he's pointing out once again. And of course, he's a great writer, and you can see that article there. And this is a really troublesome thing we're looking at if bonds and stocks are moving into positive correlation. I've got a couple of things here. Ola, I want to get to you later on CRU because it's really a key point. We've just sort of crossed a key line in the sand on the chart, $70 on Brent. I think that may be something that spooks stocks, certainly if oil continues to rise, but it's been very quiet. Alcia, you're also in the studio here on fixed income. It's been very quiet on the bond yield front. There's this idea that a lot of the Fed liquidity is just so incredibly, so incredibly excessive on liquidity that we're not getting any signal. We're not getting any pricing signal because of the presence of the Fed, and because in the case of Europe, the presence of the ECB. When do we get a signal, something we can do something with?
John, I think that it's very important to highlight some contradictory movement in the bond market, because last week when we had the PCE reading, the bond market basically was flat. It didn't move. And it's still trading within that tight range between 1.5% and 1.7%. But something is different in the break-even rate market. Break-evens around 10 days ago, they fell from their multiple year highs. And the reason for that is that the latest FOMC minutes show that an increasingly higher number of members is willing to talk about tapering. So basically, break-even rates are telling us that inflation expectations are getting lower because there might be tapering. Instead, the nominal yields of bond is telling us that investors are buying the lower for longer message of the Federal Reserve. This is divergence. And I honestly think that at a certain point, one of the two will need to give up. And probably the element to do that will be inflation as we get towards summer.
Yeah. And as you look at the sort of the expectations out for the Fed curve, we're actually towards the low end of the expectations for where rates are going to be by the end of next year. And so this transitory message is being very much bought into by the market at this time. We have a key data point there, but let's get to you, Ole, on oil. We need to know what's going on in oil here because we're pushing above the $70 barrel level on Brent crude again, just a huge level. And it's really been the key resistance this year, or at least since it was first approached back in March.
Yeah, we can see here on slide 8 that we're back above 70, and we are getting close again to the high we had early in the year, up above 71.40. The main catalyst is the OPEC Plus, a very bullish outlook from the OPEC Plus group yesterday, basically saying that the overhang of supply is almost gone. We will have a supply deficit on a daily basis heading into the autumn. As long as obviously OPEC Plus sticks to their current agreement, they will add extra barrels. I'm sure they're going to ratify that agreement later today when they meet in Vienna. I believe it's 2:30 CET that the meeting starts. But adding to that, we also had the Iran nuclear negotiations, which basically reached now the tricky part, and that's already shown to be a bit more than they can agree on. So there are still some doubts about the Iran nuclear deal, and if that fails, we could potentially see the price pop even higher. What we need to focus on over the coming months is really the response from producers outside OPEC Plus. We've seen very much of high degree of discipline by U.S. producers. But if we see WTI start to poke above $70 as well, the question is really whether they're going to maintain that discipline, because these prices are just simply very profitable at this stage. So, but generally, it's leading to it's adding to the inflationary pressures that we're seeing building elsewhere. And in that sense, let's just take gold as we stay with the commodity space. We see this phenomenal momentum that we had now since the low point back in April. It just continues. This market is, I would say, in desperate need of a correction, or just at least a period consolidation, but we continue to move higher on a daily basis. It does indicate that some of these very long-term trend-following funds, many of which have actually been short since we entered into that downtrend last year, it takes weeks for them to turn their supertankers around. It's basically just bidding on a daily basis, and it seems like that underlying bid is still in the market. Some comfort yesterday from the fact that silver is starting to outperform gold again. That potentially could give it a little bit of extra boost here, but this market needs to consolidate in it. And so far, as we've shown here, we haven't seen it. And if oil continues above $70, it probably will continue higher as well.
All right. And I want to get back to you, Althea, actually, in a moment, but I think I'm going to connect that with today's economic calendar, because we have the CPI release up later today, and I want to talk also ISM, et cetera. So we've got some more interesting inflation signals up for the day ahead. Peter, let's just briefly get to you on you've got a new basket underway here, a so-called logistics basket. There's a list, if you can put on your reading glasses, you can see there's quite a long list you've got of stocks here in this basket on slide 10.
Yeah, apologizing for the small font there, because it is, as you say, it's a big list. It's actually our biggest basket we have done. It's 50 stocks, and that's because the global logistics business is actually quite a diversified one, and it was very difficult to cut it the right way. And what we have said is that we didn't want to have any passenger traffic. We wanted to mainly focus on logistics of goods moving, you know, from A to B, so from production, manufacturing, industrial, and then, you know, some part of the last mile. And that includes as well movement of crude oil and liquefied natural gas. So we have that as well in there. We have some ports as well. A lot of interesting logistics companies. And I've put in on slide 10 here also the performance. So the blue line, that's the logistics basket against the MSCI World. And I think you would agree, John, I mean, the comeback for the logistics, you know, sector or industry, if you will, from the lows in 2020, and it's just been a straight line up here. And this is adding to the inflationary pressures. We know, at least for e-commerce, it's probably a little bit more for other type of companies, but for e-commerce companies, the current estimates that we have been able to dig out of from the internet is that around 10%, 15% is your cost component in the business from logistics. So with the current, you know, container freight rates and general last mile deliveries costs going up, it's just everywhere, port congestions. This is potential the angle I was talking about earlier in the podcast, that I actually think there is a brewing downside surprise for companies coming, because if the commodity market and this logistics market is not slowing down, I don't think they can hit their operating margins that they expect for the second half. So this is definitely something to be watching. And I will be writing a piece on this, which you can read on analysis.saxo.
So I guess the pricing, the input cost risk for a logistics company would be on the fuel side, and then on the labor side, if they're having a hard time getting additional drivers or other operators. Interesting there. And speaking of inflationary pressures, we have a EU May preliminary CPI release out today, expected to show on the headline 1.9% year on year versus 1.6% in April. And then in the month to month, 0.2, dropping from a big 0.6% increase. And then importantly on the core, 0.9% expected. So the, of course, with CPI running at the core like that, relative to the 3+% in the US, inflation very much lower. But do you have some thoughts on whether inflation could put some life back into the yields or actually be negative for EU bonds in Europe? What are your thoughts there, I'll say, coming into this release?
Well, I believe that we need to split the time frame in two at this point, John. So pre-German elections and post-German elections, John. So from now until the German elections, European sovereigns will be vulnerable to tapering fees. And today, if we have any surprise in the CPI numbers, probably that's how the market will trade European sovereigns, and that's why we would see yields rising. And then post-German elections, which we believe that is going to be a massive game changer of European sovereigns. But on slide number six, I wanted to put the graph showing Bund 10 years yields. And as you can see, it looked like yields have started to consolidate between minus 0.20% to minus 0.15%. If they break today above minus 0.15%, they would enter in a fast area and they could rise fast towards 0%. That 0% level, it's something that they can test even before the German elections. However, long term, we believe that they would stabilize much higher than that after the German elections.
Yeah, and then keep in mind, even at 0%, you're still running at a real yield, assuming these are stable inflation levels and the expected core inflation is what it is, a similar real yield than as the US, and actually a higher real yield in Europe than you're getting in the US. I think that real yield equation, and I've mentioned that on the Japanese yen, that there's little inflation to no inflation in Japan, and that's not getting enough respect in this market. I think it's a very interesting sort of mismatch or point of dissonance, I would say. All right, we're dragging on a bit here. So let's get briefly to earnings before I get to the calendar and some perspective on the ISM. Peter, Zoom video is up. Do they have a business case well, we're not post-pandemic yet, but we're hopefully transitioning post-pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, that's the question we're going to find out, because this quarter ended in late April this year, which is their fiscal year 22. They're not following the actual calendar year. It will be their last quarter of year-on-year tailwinds, basically. And even the quarter-on-quarter growth rates are already coming down quickly for Zoom. And I was just briefly looking at the different surveys that have been done lately over the past month or so, it seems like there is a growing fatigue with this work from home. Well, we know that because we work most of the days at the office, only a few days from home. So I think the flexibility will be there. But I think actually, given where consensus was just 6 months ago, I think there will be far more people working at offices and returning to their daily lives that we knew. And that's potentially a negative for Zoom unless they can capitalize on that. So I think that the outlook today that they come out with is going to be super critical, because we're talking about a company that is slowing down rapidly on their growth rate. And I think great uncertainty of what is the long-term trajectory for this company. And it's trading at a 1% free cash flow yield. So, I mean, the margin for error here is very, very little, very, very small.
All right, that'll be the key point for today. And then let's, before I get to the calendar, I put up a slide showing, just I wanted to compare where we are with the ISM prices paid for the manufacturing on the services, and then relative to the year-on-year CPI reading. So you can see that on slide 12. Just want to point out that when we get up to these levels on a diffusion index, what is a diffusion index? It's combining all the people saying things are getting higher in the case of inflation or better, versus no change versus things decreasing. And you can see from past history, at least going back these 20 plus years, that once you get up into this territory, that it just, you stop at some point and turn around. So fewer and fewer people are seeing these increases every month. So it's expected, impressively, again, the manufacturing, May ISM manufacturing prices paid to come out at 89 versus the 89.6 last month. But at some point, this is going to turn. And I think that could add to this, even if it's just reflecting a deceleration in upside, it's going to kick in this, I think, this transitory argument, unless in older space we get oil suddenly ripping significantly higher towards 75 or who knows, even $80 barrel. But I'll be watching that for that turn in this index. And again, whether the market overinterprets it or not, I'm just surprised that we have an expectation that high for today's data. And you can see today's calendar on slide 13. We're looking for that. We're looking for the preliminary, not the preliminary, but the final market manufacturing PMI just a bit before that. And then later, key to point out, we're talking about the Fed and their taper talk. It's very important that Clarida, the vice chair, came out with a taper talk last week. Very, very cautious, his rhetoric. And we have the Fed's Brainard out today. She's on the board of governors. We'll be speaking, and it's with a Q&A. She's usually quite dovish, but still we need to be watching for signals there. And then we have the Australian Q1 GDP up overnight. For today, that's a wrap. And we'll be back, of course, tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call, or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.